NFR Extra is a podcast dedicated to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo and features icons and personalities that embody the Western lifestyle.
Lot of my father in me, I guess you would say, you know, work ethic was, he was up at 5:30 every morning and going to town and didn't stop until the sun went down. So yeah, he was just a hardworking individual. No, but then to get the work ethic is where I got it from my father for sure. I guess our biggest thing that we instilled into him is integrity. You know, keep your integrity, don't lose your integrity. You know, it's the only thing you can give up that people can't take from you. But once you give it up, it's hard to get back. And
right.
I think that's probably the biggest thing I try to tell my kids. The one thing I've learned, you know, you got to make it. You got to make decisions. You got to make hard decisions. You got to move forward. Some of them aren't the right decisions, but you hope in the end you can continue to get to the final outcome, being one that is the best outcome for all.
This is pro rodeo announcer Andy Seiler, and you are listening to NFR Extra.
It is another great edition of NFR Extra. And if you have a podcast called NFR Extra, why not have the boss of the NFR? We are glad to be joined today by Alan Reinheimer, and he's got his NFR hat. He's got an NFR background. I mean, this guy is on point this morning. Alan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to see everybody. I'm glad to be part of the NFR podcast.
You know, before we got this started, Alan, you were telling us a little bit about an event that you're at. And for those that don't know your story, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the equestrian world.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Indiana, Noblesville, Indiana, and my father and mother were in show jumping. And my father was also a farrier, and we had a lot of cattle as well. So he kind of was into everything. But show jumping was the main support that we had at the farm, and he did a lot of customers as a trainer, horse trainer, and I spent many days on the road with him, and as a kid, sleeping in tack trunks, sleeping in trailers you know people wouldn't really sleep in, but it was just part of the life growing up. And then as he evolved and got into high school and everything, started doing production side of the horse shows and got out of the show jumping training side of it, and been involved with the production side ever since, course designing and managing and judging as well. So, but yeah, it's been a long run. I'm down here in Mississippi right now doing a 6-week tour. Then we head to Cala, Florida, your home country area.
Yes, sir.
And up to Virginia, New York. We took out a new show this year in Lake Placid, New York, where the Olympics were held in 1980. The Winter Olympics, and well, it's been a nice life. My family travels with me. They come back and forth to the horse shows. They show, they compete. My wife is a trainer. My niece is a trainer, and they kind of works together because I'm not in their business. They're not in my business. And we've been married for 35 years, and so continuing on. So it's been good.
Did you avoid the farrier bullet that your dad had, I'm sure, in his chamber, or did you have to get involved in that?
I did as a kid. I didn't like it. it's a tough road to go. I have a lot of respect for those guys. I watched my dad. Yeah. He was 73 when he passed away, but he shot a horse the day he passed away. So,
man,
just a trooper.
Well, it's very interesting too, with the diverse background like you have with the cattle, the show jumping, and then the shoeing. But the shoeing is something that's very interesting that I think that, that hard work, that work ethic that you have when you're around that, and kind of like I tell my kids here with our place, are doing things that just absolutely suck is like, hey, if you want to do this, this is what it takes. And if you don't, you're going to take this work ethic and apply it towards something you love and be successful with it. And that's, I'd say that you ran the other way and have done a very good job with it.
Well, I got a lot of my father in me, I guess you would say. And he instilled a lot of values in us, how to treat people, how to, get along with people, make things happen. Work ethic was he was up at 5:30 every morning and going to town and didn't stop until the sun went down. So yeah. He was just a hardworking individual and he always tried to learn from other people's mistakes. And I think he worked too hard, but then to get the work ethic is where I got it from my father for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I just want Alan to kind of highlight his father figure for himself, because he has quite the interesting family story when it comes to his kids. So can you talk a little bit about your family?
I do have an interesting story, I can tell you. Kathy and I got married in 1987, and we didn't have kids until we were 15 years into our marriage. We had three of our own kids, and they were lucky enough to be able to adopt a couple, a little boy and a little girl, who were 8 and 9, and they came into our lives when my kids were young, and it's been a good experience for all of us to have those in our lives. My sister passed away in 98. She had three little kids, which my wife took in as well, and helped raise them with their father. And then we just became legal guardians of another young lady that has just been blossoming. It's been great for my whole family to learn from that and to be around that and to be a part of it and understand the values that other people need to be instilled. And it's good. It's quite gratifying to know that we can be able to do that. So we've raised 9 kids. We have 9 kids there.
Wow.
In our family. So I know about taking kids to school, running the baseball, running the basketball, running the We never stopped. We never stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. That's impressive. 9 kids is a big number. I've got 3 and Andy's got 2, and between just those, we're still not to the number that you were for raising those kids. But what has got as growing a family, what would you say is the most important thing that you could pass down to your children? Like on the day to day, what's something that you and your wife really thought was something that was important to instill?
I guess our biggest thing that we instill to them is integrity. You know, keep your integrity, don't lose your integrity. It's the only thing you can give up that people can't take from you. But once you give it up, it's hard to get back.
Right.
I think that's probably the biggest thing I try to tell my kids, that treat everybody fairly, treat everybody the same. Never know who you're talking to. You never know what your needs are later in life. You know, so I think just instilling that part of it, to treat everybody the same. Everybody's on those grounds for a purpose. Everybody's here for a reason. Whether you agree with it or not, it's not your decision to make. It's you just give them respect until they lose your respect.
Right. Man, that's a good one too. That's like integrity. It's, you can't really put a value on it, but it's something that's absolutely priceless. And if you don't have it, it's, you see how much it's really worth.
Absolutely.
Alan, I feel like your background really makes you a lot more diversified in the horse world. I mean, we find ourselves in rodeo very insulated. Can you kind of touch on the equestrian side and truly how international it is? Because, you know, I mean, we obviously have Brazilians and people from Mexico and Canada that rodeo as well. But some of these events, you're literally seeing horses from all over the globe and a totally different level of wealth in the equestrian world.
Yeah, we've been involved, I mean, in the major events, the World Cup Finals in Las Vegas in 2000, which is where I got my start with Las Vegas events. I've been involved with the FEI. I never was a judge or a course designer from the FEI. I never pursued that avenue, but I've managed plenty of FEI events where we have several individuals from all over the world, Dubai, from Australia to New Zealand. They just come from everywhere. And the World Cup Finals was in Vegas was quite successful in 2000, 2003, 5, 6, or 5, 7, 9, and 15. And I was a part of those all. And it was nice to be at that level and see that level. But there is a tremendous amount of crossover when you think about it. You're still dealing with people. You're still dealing with animals. You're still dealing with a lot of things. Just different attributes in each of the events and each of the disciplines, but a lot of the same things. You know, we've done some things we've brought into the rodeo world at the NFR, trying to upgrade it to where we have been in the show jumping world for quite some time, with the welfare of the horse and the vaccinations of the horse, and trying to just step that up for them to help them continue on. But all in all, you know, we have been involved with several Washington International Horse Show is a big international event. We've done the World Cup Finals in Vegas, like I said. Southampton is another one. So the FEI is a Federation Equestrian International, which is the overall world leader of the equestrian world in our event. They are also the ones that help produce the Olympic Games and the World Games. They're all through that organization. It's quite a big organization out of Switzerland.
Let's take a quick pause, and we'll be right back.
Every December, more than 800 youth contestants looking to become the next generation of rodeo stars gather in Las Vegas for the Yeti Junior World Finals. Over 10 days of competition, contestants will chase the championship buckles in 9 events, including bull riding, team roping, tie-down roping, steer wrestling, barrel racing, breakaway, pole bending, saddle bronc riding, and bareback riding. Join us in the Wrangler Rodeo Arena, where these champions aim to become rodeo's next up. It's the Yeti Junior World Finals in Vegas.
So how did rodeo get involved in your life? Where at what point did that enter?
Well, in 2000, I volunteered to do the World Cup Finals in Las Vegas. That's where I met Sean Davis.
Okay. And
I was a volunteer got put into a lot of situations when Sean started finding out what I could do and where I was, and with Robert Ridgeland and everybody. And just kind of evolved from there and got to get Then one day we were doing an opening for the World Cup Finals, and Sean needed some help to run a couple bulls. So I jumped in and helped him swing gates and, help get ready for that opening. And he said, if you can do that, you can do something at the rodeo. And I said, well, don't give me an offer that you can't take out or give to me. And he called it back a couple months later and offered me a job at the NFR. And that's kind of what started.
What was that job?
I was on Danzy's crew. That was a construction maintenance crew. But my job really was 15 seconds a day. I raked around the barrels because I was a rookie. I was a rookie. I didn't know anything about rodeo. I didn't know a lot about what was going on, but I sure enjoyed it. And so I got to meet everybody. I had a lot of time on my hands, 15 seconds a day. I had a lot of time on my hands. So.
Yeah.
I did about everything. I went to talk to everybody, met everybody. Just kind of got around. I was from Chicago back then, so they called me Chicago. But I just got to start to get to know everything. And then as things progressed from there, Sean kept putting me in different positions and, you know, just elevating my jobs and doing different things. And I've done quite a few elements for the NFR over the years. And it's been good. That's where it all started. I was a barrel raker for 15 seconds a day. First day I went in the arena, I got ran over by a flag girl that wasn't paying attention. But I learned quick. I'm a quick.
They're runner. Dangerous.
Yeah. So yeah, looking back 24 years later, he probably handed you the most highly criticized job that would be available in rodeo is to rake barrels. Like, oh, that sounds easy enough, but yeah, go ahead and upset one or, you know, 15 of them.
that's a tough group, but and they're passionate about it for sure, and they care about their animals. So I don't blame them. I think it's we've tried to make changes for them as well.
Right. So out of that, out of all the jobs that you worked through there, I mean, truly working from the ground up, did you see stuff? I mean, other than the flag girl that hit you, did you see things that were like, man, this is something I really want to be a part of, and where your mind kind of started to roll of like, this is something that I want to do, and I feel that I could bring assets that are not currently being utilized here at this rodeo?
Well, I think that's how it kind of evolved throughout the job, different jobs that Sean put me into as he got trust with me and doing more things. I'm always looking for things, looking how to better things and try to, and suggesting things. We've changed a lot of the arena since I started there, just how the setup is and how things work in the installation and different things that we've done over the years, just to make it a better system and a better. And I think the biggest thing that I changed throughout the years is the camaraderie with all the crews. The crews all work together quite well now, and they're just one big cohesive group that come together for one big purpose. There's a lot of people who are worried about their jobs and worried about not somebody else making sure they blame when or where it went. Instead, I took a lot of the blame and took a lot of the stuff, and we just kind of went and changed the whole atmosphere of it to make sure that he is there for the same reason.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting dichotomy of leadership, if you will, to where, taking the blame up and then passing the credit down. And I think that'd probably go a long ways, especially in this industry where there's so many working parts and at that particular rodeo too, because the timeline, you don't have a lot, as all of you guys know on this podcast, but from the outsider's perspective, it's like, oh, it's a quick rodeo. It's fast paced. It runs really smooth, but all of the intricate parts to make it run that smooth, you have that real team focus on that deal. And it's like, that's why it works.
Well, I always say that, you're only as good as your personnel that work with you. And you want to make sure you surround yourself with good people and make sure that they are given the tools to do their job and given the leeway to make sure that their job is done correctly. They can't walk on eggshells trying to do their job and afraid of their job to be fired to make a mistake, because then that's when they make mistakes. People are going to make mistakes. It's human nature. We all make mistakes. We all do things that we don't want to do and realize it. But that's the thing. You've got to realize it and move on. And I think that, again, you're only as good as your weakest person, your weakest link in the chain. It's the same thing my father always told me. And he said, correct those things, identify them, move on, and better those in the future to make sure those mistakes don't happen. But the group at the NFR, there's over 250 employees there, and it's just it's a massive undertaking to do an event like the NFR, and no one person can do it alone. There's no way. There's just too many moving parts. There's too many. So you have to have great people with you. And I think that we do have great people. And I inherited 99% of the crew that's there. So it's kind of nice to know that they stuck into the rodeo. I know they don't stay for me. They stay for the rodeo. But it's nice to know that they love the rodeo enough that they come back and they all do a great job, from security guard to picking up trash to anything. They all have a purpose. They all have a job that needs to be done. We kind of compartmentalized a little bit of the rodeo as well, and taking it over, and made directors of each different area, which kind of oversee it and makes it easier for me to talk to a couple of people versus 250 people. So it's just an ongoing process. We keep trying to tweak it and make it better every year.
Entering your fourth year as the general manager of the NFR, what are some of the challenges you've had to overcome the last few years?
We've had some challenges for sure. It seems we get tested every year. In 21, we had a few malfunctions with our stage, and you think everything's correct and proper and ready to go, and mechanics just let you down when you when you least expect it to happen. And it did the first year. But I got to tell you, the announcers and the did a great job filling in that gap. Not a lot of people knew what was really going on. So it was, they just knew it was a longer break than we wanted. But under Dark House and even Sean Davis sat there behind me and said, I didn't see what was going on. And then why we were talking so much, why the announcers were talking so much. And then he looked over and saw the stage. And he's like, uh-oh. But it, so that was the biggest thing we had in 21. And then we did have some health issues with animals in 21, we solved that in 22. And, you know, you keep bettering it every year and you keep moving forward to the perfect event. You want to keep thinking you're going towards the perfect event. 22, we had some challenges. Obviously, the lights went out in Vegas in 22. Never happened in 35 years in Vegas. The 34th year, they went out. So we had it during this deer wrestling, and we went back and decided to change all the lighting in the arena, and we're still working on getting that correct. But the lighting in the arena got changed after that incident. And of course, last year, obviously, the shooting at UNLV, and God bless the people that were involved in that, and hearts and prayers go out to the families that lost their lives and the members, and just a sad moment. But, you know, again, you know, I always believe that, you know, things are going to happen in life, and how you handle them and how you move forward is what defines you as a group and as a person. And, well, I tell my kids that all the time, you know, things are going to happen, but, you know, you just have to move on and not dwell on it, learn from it, and move on. But again, that happening that first day and having the decision to cancel the first round, I believe is still the correct move that we made. It was the correct move. And then having that come back on Wednesday afterwards and inviting all these first responders, the UNLV staff and the students to come enjoy that event was the right thing to do. And I think everybody got behind that. And it was just a tragic event that happened. You never expect it to happen. But everybody got together that day and that next morning, and we came up with a plan. And, you know, you're always concerned about second-guessing yourself about plans and how you do them. But the one thing I've learned, you know, you got to make it. You got to make decisions. You got to make hard decisions. You got to move forward. Some of them aren't the right decisions, but you hope in the end you can continue to, get to the final outcome, being one that is the best outcome for all. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. PRCA was great to work with. The LBE was great to work with in making those decisions. But there's a lot of changes that happened this year because of that. And it was just an unfortunate thing that happened. And God bless everybody that kept us safe and continue on to do their job and keeping us able to function. So, but it was all good. I think it all came out good at the end for everybody across the board.
You know, the one thing that was unique about that morning performance is there were a lot of people there, Alan, that may have never been to the NFR before or possibly never watched it from that vantage point. So, you know, I mean, you hate to say out of a tragedy, there's a best case scenario, but I do think it assisted in tying the community together and giving people a vantage point or a way to watch that rodeo that they never would have had on their own.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think it was a good, again, you know, we come out to Vegas for 10 days, and well, more than that, really 30 days. We come in and disrupt the whole school's function there with the class, you know, the students and the faculty. And over the 10 days in the rodeo, we really disrupt it. And it was nice to have them come in and enjoy it and see it. And maybe they'll become rodeo fans for life now. Who knows? You know, I don't think people realized what went on in the arena for sure, like you said, Andy. And I think that it was a good opportunity for everybody to see that side of it.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for your time and everything that you do for our sport. We brag on it all year long, and we appreciate the effort that you, your family, and your team continue to put together to make it happen. And we can't wait to be back in Vegas this December.
Right around the corner. It seems like it's far away, but it's not. It creeps up on you quick. Yeah, December is right around the corner.
Well, thank you for your time, and travel safe this summer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Bye-bye.
Want to experience more of the NFR? Then visit NFRExperience.com. And we invite you to subscribe to NFR Extra on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and wherever you're listening right now. If you like what you've heard on NFR Extra, we would love it if you gave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe.